Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our weekly Penguins chat. Andrew Destin with Matt Wenzel. We're coming to you guys right after the All-Star break. First thing I'll ask, Matt, before we get into the rest of the pod, how was the break for you? Were you able to take a little bit of time off, step away, or are you working ahead for the All-Star break?
I feel like you're taunting me. You know I didn't really have time off. My wife was out of town, so I was managing two kids, and then I pumped out a few stories over the break, including a Patrick Laine story. So, very funny.
I couldn't help myself. I was setting it up. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
Yeah, a lot of people went to Florida and things of this nature, and I did not. I drove to Cranberry once. That was the extent of my travels.
I didn't go to Florida, so I can't claim that. That sounds a lot warmer and a lot nicer. But the Laleem story is one that I want to get into later because I know that was an enjoyable one for me to read. But the All-Star break, certainly got a chance to spend it up in Toronto. That was a first for me. You've been to, what, four or five of these? Is that right?
About three too many, but yes.
Yeah, my quick gut reaction before getting into the real stuff. Enjoyable in some aspects and other parts. I don't know if overwhelming is the word or I don't know what the right adjective is for it, but there were moments where I was definitely like, this seems a little overkill. I don't know that I need to be rushing back to it, but all told an enjoyable experience. So thanks for throwing that bone my way.
Did you drink with Bieber or no?
I tried. His handlers got in the way. They thought I was crazed with like a pen and a Sharpie. They thought he had wanted them to like sign me or something, but yeah, I was trying to get a drink with the Biebs, but he wouldn't go for it.
I mean, look, there's pros and cons with All-Star Weekend. I don't think everything is broken. Are we going to get into All-Star break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll let you set me up. But I don't think it's all bad. It's just not a fun event for us to cover, but nobody cares about us. It's about the fans. Right. I don't think it's all bad.
Right, and in terms of it not being all bad, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts were on it watching it from afar, but the skills challenge, I mean, there was a lot made about it being changed up this year and, you know, kind of being a reinvigorated thing. But I personally found that to maybe be a little bit more enjoyable than the game itself, or at the very least, it was a better skills challenge than usual. What was kind of your takeaway from that?
I agree. I didn't watch all of it, but I did watch a little bit of it with my son before I had to send him to bed. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to like look back on when I was a kid, you know, what I remember about watching the skills competition. Because, you know, you're 10, who knows how much you remember what it was like back in the day. But I mean, I remember getting excited to watch like the true legends of the game, you know, do the skills accuracy, you know, the fastest skater, hardest shot, like the true skills. And I always enjoy that. I know it's not for everyone. You know, I don't know what younger people think. I'm a middle-aged boomer at this point, but I appreciate the true skills aspect of it. Like I didn't like, you know, it was met with a lot of eye rolling for me when they did like the breakaway challenge where they introduced these props and the dying, and it was just like gimmicky and showy. And I do like it that they got back to the skills of this. And I actually think it's pretty cool that, you know, all the guys were competing in all the events to determine who was the most skilled player overall. I thought that was a nice twist. We'll see if that novelty wears off in a couple of years, but I actually like that aspect of it. I thought it was pretty cool that you just got, you know, a dozen guys or whatever and said, okay, like let's have you compete in all these skills and we'll add up scores. It's almost like, you know, the all around competition in Olympics gymnastics, for example, if folks who didn't tune in, it's, you know, kind of a collection of all the skills, hardest shots, skating, passing. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I also think that's, I know Sid wasn't a competitor in the event. You know, I think that's an event that would lend itself to his skills if he ever wanted to participate.
He probably doesn't.
Probably doesn't.
You're saying at 37 next year that he's not rearing to be in the All-Star Challenge as well as the game? I'm shocked, man. I'm shocked.
Well, and I know like people have mixed feelings about like whether or not these guys need to go or not. I mean, I kind of think, is it really that hard for them to be recognized as fans or by fans to come to the event and do it for the game? But I will say for the players, like, why does the NHL have to make this a 3-day event where you have like a media day and a women's game and the draft one day and then skills and then the game? Like, condense it to 2 days. Like, can't you have the draft right before skills and have the women play before that? So it's, you know, more eyeballs are on the women playing. Like, I don't understand why the NHL feels the need to stretch it into 3 days. It's not like the NBA does that, for example, or baseball. Does baseball? Mm-mm, you cover really? Baseball. I don't watch baseball, but so that's like, I understand the players kind of like grumbling about having to go for 3 days. I don't understand why don't they just kind of condense everything into 2 days, but you know, maybe that makes it more appealing for players who, you know, some are into it, some are not. To each their own, I guess, but it is about the fans. But the NHL does need to kind of make it appealing to the players as well.
Yeah, certainly about the fans. And I think the reception from the players in most part about the skills challenge, at least, was that they were all pretty much for it. That, like, to your point.
Except for Kucherov.
Yeah, the Kucherov was hilarious. So, like, throwing the waving at the crowd, like, so funny. But I don't know. I think it feel like the general consensus was like, hey, these are things we actually do on the ice. Like, that was, I think, a comment that McDavid made is like, these are things we do in a game for the most part. These are like hockey skills, like you said. So that was something that I took away. And to your point, I mean, 2 days, I think, certainly covers it, because in baseball, it's a 3 day event, but that's just because they have a celebrity softball game on the first day. 2 days is sufficient for sure.
We have a celebrity guest here. My daughter's home sick from school, so she's just wandering around in the shot for our video viewers are seeing her right now.
I'm saying, we got a little cameo. That's big time, Mr. Menzel.
It reminds me of the days like early in COVID when we did everything via Zoom, and it was like the bubble, and we were doing these press conferences, and my kids are home, and I'm like, they put me on in this press conference setting to ask Chris Letang a question via my computer, and right as they unmute me, my son walks in and demands a snack, and you kind of see Letang looking around like, what? Those were the days. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, and you know, obviously Sid was criticized by one person for, you know, not coming until Friday or whatever. But, you know, I think most people were kind of pleased with the player participation. And, you know, I think it was an okay event. Room for improvement. I don't mind 3-on-3. So I do think with skills, it was a big step in the right direction.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the local sports team.
All right, let's do it. Talk a little Sid. Obviously, he was the man of the hour at the All-Star game, All-Star weekend in terms of Penguins participation. I'll start general here, though, and we can sprinkle in some observations just of him at the All-Star game and things of that nature. But what have your observations been of his play as we look ahead to the second half here? Obviously, it was an All-Star season for him to this juncture. But what do you think, in your observations, has allowed it to be at that level? And the obvious answer of he's scoring a lot is not going to suffice here.
He's really good at hockey.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
I mean, it's just his all-around game. Yeah. I mean, you did the big story where you talked to a lot of people around the game about his aging gracefully. And, you know, I love the comparison. I cannot remember who made it, but to Gordie Howe, just in terms of the longevity. And it's no surprise that Sid is the type of player who's still playing well and probably still will be playing well at age 40, assuming he's still playing. It's because, obviously, the motivation is always there. Hockey sense is, you know, beyond Hall of Fame worthy. And, you know, strength and just his attention to all the little details. I mean, you know, look at the faceoffs. I mean, I know it's a story that's well told, but he really struggled as a rookie in faceoffs. And he said, okay, like, I'm going to work really hard to get better at it, you know, and maybe other young forwards would be like, well, I just put up 100 points. Who cares about these stupid faceoffs? But, you know, over time, he's just gotten better and better in that area. So, I mean, to me, yeah, it's just, you know, there's been a little bit of decline in his physical tools, you know, as you would expect for a guy who's at his age. But, you know, it's not really super noticeable, and he more than makes up for it with all these other intangibles and skills and just the elite drive and hockey IQ. You know, I think the talk about him being like Selke worthy is that ship sailed 2-3 years ago. I thought he had a pretty good case. I cannot remember the year, but he finished fourth. Now you mentioned the goals, you know, he's got to cheat a little bit more to provide offense. Not that he's cheating, but you know, maybe he's not as locked in defensively because he's got the scoring burden for this team right now. So, you know, I don't know that he's been like sulky worthy defensively, but, you know, people say that he's still the most complete player in the game. You certainly have to think that he's in the short list of players who would be, you know, up for that fake award.
Yeah, it was I think it was Jordan Stahl was the one who had the rumors about, or spreading that about Sid for Selke. And you and I have talked about that both on this pod and away from it. It's something that probably doesn't have much merit to it. But when you look at what he's done this year in terms of that two-way play, it's not as if he's sacrificed all defense for offense. It's kind of been, hey, he actually is playing that two-way game. It's just not quite to the same degree as, you know, I think it was 2018-19, I think, was the season that he was fourth in Selke. Feel free to fact check me on that, viewers. But
that would take work. Can you guys do our work for us, do our job for us?
We'll gladly take the editing. But I don't know. It's just like watching him at this current level, my mind goes to two places. And obviously, I'm coming from a very different perspective versus yourself. And many of you guys watching here have been in Pittsburgh and have followed this team for much longer than I. But just in watching Sid, my mind goes to two places of one, how much longer can he keep this up for? And two, like, how sustainable actually is it, right? Like, we've seen him turn in great years year after year, but he's on a scoring clip to be just below his best scoring season ever. To me, that feels a little bit unsustainable. But then on the other side, I'm like, but it's kind of been pretty consistent all season long, and he's kind of been asked to do that. So I don't know if I have a real question there. It's more an observation of, hey, like, he's performing at this level. Is that much of a surprise in terms of can he keep it up in the second half, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you pointed to one thing about his season that's a surprise, it would be the goal scoring. I mean, his the amount of shots he is taking is up. Right. You know, I don't know that, like, he went into the season and said, you know, I'm going to shoot three more shots per game or whatever it is. But, you know, he's talked about just, you know, letting the game come to him. But he has shot the puck more, which, you know, you shoot the puck more, odds are it's going to go to the net a little bit more often. You know, I haven't looked at his shooting percentage recently, but, you know, I'd imagine that's probably significantly above his career clip. So maybe there'll be a little bit of goal scoring regression down the stretch, but I think that's the one thing that stands out, that this guy is, you know, at minimum on a 40 goal pace, and it's not out of question he gets to 50 goals, something he's only done a couple other times. That to me is what really stands out. And it also says a lot about the league that he has all these goals and, you know, what is he, seventh in goals still? It's just a lot of guys are putting the puck in the net, and you know, that's fun.
Yeah, guys like Kucherov, who certainly heard it in Toronto. I found that so enjoyable. But regardless, this may be obvious, but I just want to ask this. I mean, Sid, it probably goes without saying, but if the Penguins even want to consider the P word, the playoff word, like, he needs to keep playing pretty much at this level for them to even be considered in such a conversation, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, and then they need more than that. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine if he were to go through a little bit of a rut for 2-3 weeks, or, you know, knocking wood, if he were to get injured, if the team would be able to overcome all that. I mean, they already face, you know, not long odds, but not great odds. They have some games at hand, but they also have to win these games. So yeah, they need Sid to continue to carry the load, and they also need some other guys to step up. I'm looking at Evgeny Malkin and Riley Smith here. You know, we'll see about Jesse Puljujärvi. He's not a savior, but he could help them. But yeah, I mean, at minimum, they need Sid to keep this going if they're going to do anything this year. And that's a lot to ask of a 36-year-old, but he's not your average 36-year-old.
Yeah, it's probably a good segue into some housekeeping items. But before we get into those, I want to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. Again, that's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Matt, you bring up there Riley Smith and Jesse Puljujärvi, both guys who are back at practice on Sunday. We're recording this Monday morning, as well as John Ludvig was back at practice. I guess my first question that I have to ask is, you know, just impressions of what we saw from Jesse Puljujärvi. This is a guy who was with the Penguins on a free agent tryout in December, looked a little bit green getting back, coming from the hip surgery. Initial impressions, how did he look to you just skating on the ice?
He looks very big. That's my takeaway.
He is large. Helmet's large, too.
Were you looking for more than that? Yeah, he has got quite the dome on him. I mean, he looks like a bobblehead. Yeah. But yeah, large man. looks to be skating around okay. I mean, I don't think like he's going to be doing triple axles or anything like that, but you know, he talked a lot about his comfort level. I mean, this guy came off double hip surgery, pretty significant surgery. Not everyone comes back to 100%, certainly not right away. He talked about his 13 games in Wilkes and just how, you know, he feels better. He's pain-free, which is, I think, is an important thing. I know that he dealt with a lot of pain prior to the surgery, and obviously working his way back probably was no picnic either. And he also said over the last several weeks since the Penguins first signed him on his tryout agreement that his range of motion has improved. So, you know, he didn't say this. I can't imagine he's like 100% of where he was physically prior to these injuries. But, you know, the Penguins, there were no guarantees that they were going to sign him to an NHL contract. Mike Sullivan said, you know, yes, he had to go. Is it Yessie, Jesse? What are we going to say here?
Yessie.
Yeah, yes, he had to go to Wilkes and kind of, Sullivan put establish his game before they felt comfortable signing him to a contract. But I do think the fact that they signed him to a 2-year contract, even if it was for just $800,000 a year, which is pretty much close to the league minimum, the fact that they signed him to a multi-year deal suggests that they feel like, okay, we saw enough to think that, this guy is going to be okay physically. It's not like that's a major financial commitment, and it's not a guarantee that he's going to, remain in Pittsburgh over the next year and a half. But I do think the fact that it was a multi-year deal says a little something just about, like, how he checked out medically, even if the financial compensation isn't that much of a risk for the Penguins.
Right. It's a little bit more than a flyer. It's, hey, we're showing a little bit of commitment. We're slightly more confident than maybe most people would be just given the nature of it. And one little tidbit to throw in there with you bringing up the 100%, just like, I don't know if you felt this from talking to him yesterday, but he's got a funny way of speaking in English. I know it's not his native tongue, and some of the things he's, pretty positive, upbeat guy. And I remember asking him a couple of weeks, like, hey, are you close to 100%? And he was like, I don't know what 100% feels like. It's been a long time since I was 100%, many years. And I was like, oh, well, I guess he really was playing through pain with the hips for a couple of years there. So
I feel like we should probably set expectations for him as a player, though, because I know some fans, look at the fact that he was the number 4 overall pick in 2016. And obviously you don't get picked that high if you don't have some skills and ability. But at this point, especially coming off the injury, I mean, the Penguins are looking at him to come in and bring a physical presence, yep, to get in on the forecheck, use his size, and, kind of be, more of a grinder type player. He averaged, I think, like a point every 3 games with Edmonton and Carolina leading up to this point. So he should chip in a little bit offensively, but I think if fans are expecting him to come in and, produce it even like a 20 goal clip, especially coming off the injury, I think that's maybe a little bit ambitious. That's not to say he can't get to that point. Obviously the pedigree's there, and he's a big man who can move pretty well, or at least he did prior to his injury. But I don't think anyone is expecting, at least within the Penguins, that he's going to come in and be a savior by any means. But obviously he can help him. Bottom six has been okay this year, but he has a chance to boost that group with his size and his forechecking and the occasional goal.
Yeah, looks like he's going to get a chance to skate there on the third line with Lars Eller. And just a last tidbit there throwing on Puljujärvi before we move off. The point production, yeah, all told for a guy who was a number 4 overall pick, probably not as much as you'd like to see in Edmonton. And a lot of that also came when he was skating on Connor McDavid's line. He got some good run with him. So I'm not saying that's a boost, but if you're on the third line, I wouldn't say that we should be expect this guy to be a point every game type of player. But
he's also had like a strange career too. I mean, it's definitely a worthy investment, but like he was a top 4 pick. He had contract squabbles with Edmonton and was kind of coming and going there. It didn't feel like Edmonton or he vice versa, like they were completely committed to each other. He went on to Carolina and didn't have a great year because he was playing through these injuries. So like whether it was COVID or the contract stuff or these injuries, like he really hasn't been able to kind of have an extended stretch where he just went out there and played. So, at the cost, I mean, signing him to a cheap 2-year deal, like why not? Definitely a worthy, you know, kick of the tires there by Cal Dubas and the Penguins.
Yeah. Somebody who might be more expected to contribute offensively, though, coming back, or at least that would be our impression, with Riley Smith coming back to practice. It's a guy who's, if memory serves me correctly, did not end up going on long-term IR after he had that upper body injury at the end of December, I believe that was, or early January. You know, with Riley Smith coming back potentially in the lineup as soon as this game against Winnipeg, you know, how important is that for the Penguins, specifically of Evgeny Malkin's line, given the success they had earlier in the year trying to recapture that?
Yeah, it's very important. You know, Riley Smith. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him over the next month. I mean, he's a player to watch, like, a lot of different ways the next month could go for Riley Smith. You know, he hasn't always looked like a guy who's thrilled to be here. I know that the trade from Vancouver to Pittsburgh was really hard on him. He got off to a great start. Then he went 15 games without a goal. Just kind of up and down. Now he's dealing with this injury. You know, you just wonder, you know, does this guy want to be here? The Pens need him to be here. They need, you know, they brought him in because of what he did for Vegas. They thought he could click with Malkin off the rush. So, yeah, I mean, he's looks like he's going to play Tuesday. He said he's targeting a return on Tuesday. And, you know, the Penguins really need him and Malkin to hit the ground running because Malkin has been really up and down this year. And, you know, the power play is probably the biggest problem for the Penguins this year. Their play in overtime has been a problem. But not far down that list of issues for this team has been the second line's inconsistency. So they need that line to get going. And if it doesn't, and the Penguins kind of continue to linger outside of playoff position, you know, you have to think Riley Smith will be a name to watch at the trade deadline if Cal Dubas decides, okay, I'm gonna punt towards next year.
Yeah, safe to say, regardless of, you know, how the Penguins fare, having Riley Smith healthy is probably a good thing in general. Just like you mentioned, either way, if they do better, it's probably because he's playing better, and if not, then at least he's healthy and can be more valuable as a potential trade asset.
What is worth noting too, just like a little tidbit, I mean, we're recording this Monday morning, about to head to practice, maybe things change, but on Sunday, the first practice back after the break, Riley Smith was on the top power play unit. They have it split up. Malkin and Carlson are on the second unit. But I did think that was interesting that they look to be putting Riley Smith right back on the top unit. So maybe that's a way to get him going. Maybe he helps out on the power play and that kind of, you know, carries into his 5-on-5 game.
Were you surprised to see that at all at practice?
Yes. Yeah. Riley Smith, yeah. just because, I mean, this was his first practice in a month, so you're not quite sure how he's going to get utilized. But, yeah, I can't say that I thought going into practice that I would see him in the top power play. I mean, that's not to say it's a bad decision. I mean, they, you know, with this unit split, we saw when they did it before the break that the top unit without Malkin and Carlson, Letang and the point, was a lot more decisive, shoot first, urgent. And that is the kind of game that Smith brought to the power play for a little bit there in the fall. On that left flank, he's willing to just kind of skate down and let it rip. And if that's the way they're going to go on the power play, I mean, it does make sense that he would kind of fit in that area.
Right. Yeah, it's certainly something to monitor. I mean, this unit, as we know, has struggled all year. So with Malkin and Carlson being on the second unit, Smith getting some run there on the first with Letang, it's going to be a storyline to monitor. But I want to wrap up this pod real quick before we get into the stick taps. Got to ask you about the Patrick Laliem story. I really enjoyed that. I know this isn't relevant to the current Penguins, but as part of our Where Are Yins Now series, that was a piece that you did. Just want to ask you, how enjoyable was that for you to write that story? It must have been a fun one, huh?
Well, it was fun, yeah. So I'm 41. I'm from Butler. I was a high school goalie. So right when Laliem was going on that run was just kind of like in my formative years as a hockey player and fan. So I remember being enthralled with the run that Laliem went on, going 14-0-2 to start his career, which is still stands as the NHL record for an unbeaten streak for a goalie. So, you know, that run really stood out to me. And I didn't remember a ton about it. And I've heard some other fans as well. You know, obviously we remember the run and him winning all the games, but, you know, I hadn't really realized at the time that, you know, there was a couple of contract squabbles and that's what led to him ultimately being traded. And also, like, I had forgotten, or maybe not even realized, just how good he was. Like, not only did he win 16 games in a row, like, sure, like, you know, with Lemieux and Jagr and some of those guys, like, I might have been able to win a game for the Penguins in goal. That's how much firepower they had. But over that stretch, the Leam allowed three goals or fewer in every single game. His save percentage, I think, was 947. So it wasn't just that he was like winning games; it's that he was dominant. So I had a great chat with him. We talked for like a half hour at PPG Paints Arena. He was here in town for his work with TVA Sports, the TV network. He was covering the Canadians who were in town for the morning skate. So I had a great chat with him. He was really candid. He talked about how like he still kind of wonders, like, okay, like I wonder how my career would have played out had we been able to get a deal done. He loved Pittsburgh. He loved, like, he talked glowingly about Yager and Lemieux and how well they treated him. And, you know, he said he ran into Yager at the Super Bowl a few years ago, and they're still friends. So, like, you can tell he really enjoyed his time here. And he eventually resurfaced in the NHL a couple years later in Ottawa, you know, won 200 games, made an all-star, made a conference finals. So he was able to have some success, but, you know, I thought it was interesting that he admitted, like, yeah, I still wonder, you know, how my career would have played out differently, you know, had I been able to get a deal done. You know, obviously the Pens had Barrasso and Reagan at the time. You know, there was clearly a logjam when trying to figure out who to keep at that point. But it's just kind of a fun what if in Pittsburgh sports history. And, you know, I had a lot of fun just kind of like going through that run back in 96, 97, and just kind of learning a little bit more that I hadn't realized at the time when I was a dopey teenager instead of a dopey middle-aged man.
Oh, I mean, dopey is not the adjective I would use, but to each his own. It was a great story. I enjoyed it regardless, and you guys got to check it out on post-gazette.com. I personally enjoyed it as somebody who the surface level of it for me. I mean, I knew about the run just in you bringing it up and reading about it a little bit. It kind of like brought back a little bit to me of just like, hey, what happened here? But the contract squabbles were something that I certainly didn't know about. Was that something that was like you obviously reported about it and discussed as much, but was that something that was like in the public eye when he was here?
Yeah.
Pretty well known. Okay.
Yeah. Our good friend Joe Starkey actually wrote about that. He might've been at the other paper in town at the time, but I did, when I was doing my research, I found a piece from Joe about, yeah, I mean, a lot of it came down to Lalime wanted a one-way contract, which paid him the same amount of money in the NHL or the AHL, and the Pens wanted to offer him a two-way. I mean, that was one of the big stumbling blocks. Like, Lalime kind of felt at that point, like, all right, I've shown that I'm worth keeping, and, you know, I don't have a problem. This is what he said now. He said, I didn't have a problem going down to the minor leagues while waiting for, you know, something to happen with Barrasso and Reggett, but I just wanted to be paid the same amount. I think he had earned that. So I got Lalime's perspective. I don't know if the Penguins and Craig Patrick had a different viewpoint on it, but yeah, this was something that was out there. I just, you know,
right.
I was young. I didn't realize the whole kind of scope of everything that went on at that time.
Sure. Yeah. I guess that's more the question to it is like, how much was this like the team-wide narrative or something that was, you know, it was certainly out there, but not something that was necessarily widespread across the city, or at least from our perspectives. But regardless, that's pretty much all the time we got. Want to hit you up with the stick taps. Who are you going to hand it out to this week, Matt?
I'll keep it quick. Stick tap to you, so I didn't have to cover the All-Star game. It's fun to watch on TV. It's not fun to cover. Nobody cares about us, but it's usually a zoo, a logistical nightmare. Plus, you know, I went last year in Florida and the year before in Vegas. That wasn't an accident. Toronto is a great city, and I actually heard the weather was pretty good, but I didn't really have a ton of interest in going up north of the border in early February. So stick tap to Andrew for falling on that grenade for me.
Well, stick tap to you as well for giving that to me, because the weather was good. I was able to get outside for a couple of runs when it was in the 30s. As the California guy I am, I was bundled up wearing like three layers on each top and bottom, so I'm still kind of soft, but whatever. My other stick tap goes out to Crosby. First time for me seeing him interact with the media in that kind of a capacity north of the border. Had been on the trip to Toronto and Montreal in December and had saw him talk to, you know, 5-10 different people that he doesn't interact with on a daily basis in that capacity. But it was a little different when it was such a large conglomerate of media members. I thought he handled it pretty darn well. A quick anecdote that I'd like to share was just he got asked a question about something that was not particularly relevant to the All-Star game, and made the point of saying to the reporter, hey, like, let's talk about that aside one-on-one. I don't know that this is appropriate to discuss in a 15-second soundbite. Just want to commend Sid on that, because there's a lot of guys who would just brush off that question and not address it in any capacity. So stick taps to Sid, and stick taps to you for letting me get up there for that. I had a blast with it.
Perfect.
All right. Good talk, everybody. We'll catch you all again next week. Keep up with our content on post-gazette.com, and we will talk to you all again soon.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.